Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Kurdistan Connection with myself, Matt Broomfield. As our regular viewers and listeners will know, in this series we focus on the links between Kurdistan and the outside world, diplomatically, culturally, civilly, and militarily as well. Of course, the main issue on the agenda remains the deadly earthquake, which has struck across southern Turkey and northern Syria, has claimed to date over 45,000 lives in Turkey alone, along with around 5,000 lives in Syria. Some of the worst affected regions are home to large Kurdish populations, also other minority populations, such as the Alevi religious minority, relatedly, in Turkey. And more broadly, this crisis has raised questions about the handling of the situation in these southern regions of Turkey by the Turkish government, and heightened the political crisis in Turkey to previously unforeseen levels, I think it's fair to say. So I'm very happy today to have the chance to hear some observations directly from on the ground in the disaster zone of that earthquake. I'm joined today, I'm very happy to say, by Gael Luni, a long-term friend and supporter of the Kurds. Gael is a freelance photographer who's been working on the Kurdish issue for over two decades now, so has a great wealth of experience and observations. He's also the vice president of the Kurdish Breton Friendship Association, which works on defending the civil and cultural rights of the Kurds, both in Gael's homeland, Breton in France, Brittany, and also in Kurdistan. Gael has just returned from a mission, a trip on the ground to Turkey to observe the fallout of the earthquake. So Gael, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for your invitation.
The best way to begin, perhaps you can just simply summarize, what's this trip you've just been on? Where were you? What did you see?
In fact, it started with a phone call from my colleague, François Leger, who is also a freelance photographer. And we've been working together for long-term project in Kurdistan of Turkey, Bakur, Bashur, and Rojava. And he called me, he says that he was willing to go. And I just respond to him that if he was going, I will going too, because we know each other for a very long time. And we know that together we can make some good work on the field. And then we just call our former president of the association to ask if he could support, you know, the idea to go on the field. And he said, okay, so we just fixed the traveling to first Diyarbakir and then to Adiyaman for many days.
And yes, maybe you could just describe for people in both Diyarbakir, the largest Kurdish city in Turkey, and in the other locations that you went to, what did you observe? What's the situation?
Yeah, the first reaction, it was like, because we have so many friends in Diyarbakir that the idea was like, due to our involvement in the Kurdish question, they said we have so many friends in Diyarbakir and we have the feeling that we should go, because we're always thinking that we should be there in the worst moment and in the best moment as well. It means like we've got friends and we've got to be here. So we arrived in Diyarbakir, but the friends told us that there were some casualties and some destruction in Diyarbakir, but it wasn't that worst in regard of other cities in the area. So our friends told us that maybe we should go to Adiyaman, which was the city that was the easiest city to reach in the little short time we had at that moment. So that's why we decided just to move from Diyarbakir. That they told us that there was the casualty was almost 700 people died in Diyarbakir, but the situation was worse in Adiyaman. So they make the connection to some people who were in JMAV, which is the cultural center, Alevi center in Adyaman, who there were like a coordination of trade unions and leftist parties who were working there for helping the population in a sort of non-governmental organization. So that's what we wanted to document first. So we went there.
And yeah, go on. Yeah, maybe you can describe the humanitarian situation.
In fact, we found a regular bus line to get there. But the first impression when we arrived in Adyaman, it's like there was no more public transportation, no more taxis as well. It's easy to understand, and because the population of Adyaman had just fled to the villages because it was no way to live in Adyaman after the two quakes. Because the population fled to the villages in regard of safety, because I think that due to the construction, the houses in the villages are sometimes one floor, two floors, and I think that living in the villages was easier than to stay in the city. So when we arrived at the bus station, you know, in fact, to be clear, we've been firstly helped by a policeman who was taking his service in the city, and he said, "We have a car," which is strange. I can tell you, it's many times a relationship with police is not that way. You know, it's like there was a truce, you know, says, okay, they're coming from Europe, man, they're coming to help. So, and he asked for a soldier to get a taxi, which is first time, you know, we see that kind of, so it has to be noticed, you know, it's just like to give you a certain sense of atmosphere that was there in Adyaman. And then we get a taxi to arrive in Djemavien at night. And so people were there, mostly volunteers coming from all part of Turkey, but mainly east of Turkey. And so we took the connection with the volunteers, and we've been warmly welcome. You know, this is we were surprised because it's always difficult to come around as a photojournalist, you know, and with the feeling that you are not doing something really important, strong. But the response was to say, it's okay, it's nice to see other people coming from abroad, you know, to come and document what's going around. So it was like nice to them, you know, just to accept them because there was a lot of work to do, and we had the feeling that we were not really useful at first in regard to the situation.
And what was the kind of the scale of the destruction? And we've seen a lot of images coming out of cities kind of totally destroyed, people being pulled out of the rubble. What level were things at when you were there?
In fact, Adyaman has been touched really hardly by the quake. But in regard from what we know, and we talked about the people who were there, it was less than other cities, just like Elbistan and Kahramanmaraş, Maraş, were strongly, heavily destroyed by the quakes. And from what we've seen the day after, because we went on the streets of the city of Adyaman, I can say that it was like one on three buildings that was on the ground. But to understand quite well, I mean that the buildings that were still here were in the structure really damaged as well. So the first impression is like the streets of the city are deserted. There's no much people left. The only one you can find there are the people who have no other alternative. They just have to stay there because they can move somewhere else. The situation is easy to understand. No water, no electricity, and the night are pretty cold, so you have to rest outside of the building. And first, the fact that the AFAD gave some tents, but not that much. And these tents were given to Turkish so-called Turkish citizen, and all the refugees coming from Syria were neglected. They had to do by themselves. So this is the situation, like deserted city. You've got many buildings on the ground, many buildings damaged, and the one who stands are deserted. It's no way to live there. It's too dangerous. And the people who stay there were living in a tent in next of their place, you know, and risking to go there to get some belongings. But really quickly, that's what we observed.
So thank you for telling us a little about the situation on the ground and what you saw. So you mentioned that AFAD, this kind of Turkish state relief agency, was working there on the ground. What was the government doing? What were non-governmental organizations doing? Who was helping people?
But in fact, due to the situation, from what we heard from France, is that getting close to AFAD as a freelance journalist, we had to get accreditation, and in fact, it was we just thinking that it was not in the time we had a good idea to go on try to document AFAD action. We just noticed that we have seen things just like tents, distribution of food, but it was much more like charity organization that was in the streets of Adyaman. It was like a very light support from the population. What we have seen also, it's a village of tents that is ruled by the AFAD. But on the ground, we haven't seen much, in fact. It was just like in regard of the population of Adyaman, which is 300,000 people. Okay, the population fled, but the one who stayed there, they were in great despair. It was like very little to our.
And what did people say about the support that was being offered to them? They felt like it was not enough.
Oh, it's clear. It's clear. Yes, we made a first. It's a way of we work generally. We don't want to push pressure on people. This is the good way to be a freelance photographer. It is, we just want to take the time to people to come to us and to talk to us. So the first day we just made some picture, made some little connection, and the day after we made the same round trip in the area, and then the people just invited us for tea, you know, have a chat for a moment, and every time the people said exactly the same thing, you know. The quakes arrived and no help for 3 days. So it came back and back and forth and on that says no help in the beginning, you know. We had the discussion from a guy, we're going to call it Erdal. His three brother was caught under the rubble of the family house. And hopefully, you know, they were alive and not injured, but 3 days without help, they were just like being in front of the house and try to support that by talking. And he said it's only there was no police, no militaries, no AFAD, no nothing, you know. And he said that the help came from a rescue team coming from Turkey who succeeded to get the three people out from the house. But this testimony is the same always. No help, no nothing, you know. So people were pretty angry. And in regard to the politics of the city, Adyaman is supporting AKP. The municipality is an AKP municipality. And people are voting for AKP for 67 percentage of the population are voting for AKP, and all the people were mad about how the municipality wasn't there, and there was no help from state, to be clear.
Because you've been going to Kurdistan and to Turkey for a long time. Do you feel like, I mean, of course things are different, do you feel like people are more angry now than ever before, or people who previously stood alongside the government
It depends of the sometimes of the population in the city you are, but mainly what they say from you've got some municipalities with the mayor has been elected EDP, okay, but there are also other cities that where the EDP, which is a legal pro-Kurdish party in Turkey, and the states just dismiss the mayor and put in place an administrator, a trustee, they call in English, if it's the right words.
Yeah.
And the population says they were doing very little for the population before the quake. Just imagine after the quake. The question is, but the reality is, like the many, the trustees, they collect the money from the taxes and they're doing very little on the ground. So it was the situation before. And in fact, the quakes just show that Erdogan's system has failed, you know? He said always, Mr. Erdogan always said that Turkey is a great country, you know? But in reality, it's a question of corruption and very little things done. And just imagine, you know, the problem with the Kurdish issue means that in East, the trustees sent by Ankara, they're doing very little, very little.
Were people talking about the elections that should be coming up in Turkey in the coming months?
Yeah. It means like right now, from what I heard, they said that the election will take place the 14th of May, next May. If it doesn't change, which it will come very quick. And in fact, the election will be much more open than before. But we just know that Mr. Erdogan doesn't take care much about democracy, and it's a question of surviving for him. So he will do whatever he can, you know, to make this election, to win that election. It's a question of survive for him.
In general, so Adiman, you said this was a majority city which voted primarily for the AKP, for Erdogan's party, in the last election. And if people are angry now, did people feel like there's an alternative, or it was just people were expressing their anger, but there's not a sense that things can change?
Yeah, it's difficult to figure it out because, you know, it's always the same thing, you know. Mr. Erdogan, AKP, they say we will send some money, we will do something. And people, sadly, they can believe on that. They stay on the very kind of conservative, traditional kind of people who are voting for AKP. But in fact, maybe it's going to change, you know, because it's like it appears to people that there is a big issue with that, with Mr. Erdogan and AKP in power. So I'm not a fortune teller. It's very difficult right now to know what will happen in the few weeks to come. But I think that it's difficult to respond because, you know, 10 provinces who are now under state of emergency, and these areas who are just much more dedicated to HDP, means that maybe these people were not able to vote as well. So it's difficult to lean between the line. I just try to figure it out what will happen, but it's very difficult to have the right picture of what would happen. We have got some leads, but well, I'm just a freelance photographer, you know. I've got some point of view on the things, but we hope and people hope as well, you know, that something will change, because it's just the quake shows to the world that something's going wrong in Turkey, you know, too much corruption.
As a photographer, as a journalist, you're like you know, in a sense, the eyes of the West or the eyes of your country there in Turkey. Did you feel like there was one message that people in Turkey wanted to give to the outside world? Well, what did the people affected by this earthquake want the world to hear?
In fact, all the people we met was just saying, just look what happened around here. It says we are supposed to have, we pay our taxes. We are good citizens. And in fact, we were in a big suffering and we received no help, no help at all. It's just like the people were just like had the feeling to be abandoned totally by the states, you know, that the state had failed on that. That was really strong, you know. That's what the people said. Just look what our situation is right now, just 10 days after the quake, and this situation will last for months, for years now, and that's what they had to say to us. Says say that to the people, you know, and make the information goes that we felt in the first days of the quake abandoned, but we feel abandoned now. So tell that to the people. It's not the question of, a quake happened in Turkey and then we go to the other, catastrophe and it will last, you know. It's millions of people are impacted by these quakes. So it would take a long time for them to recover and come back to normal life. And I think that's what we have to do, and we work on that. It's to sensibilize the people around here in Europe, in France, in Brittany, to say it's not finished. It's only the beginning.
Yeah. And if there are people in Europe, in France, in Brittany that want to support, what's the best way? I think because a lot of donations, they go to, maybe they go to AFAR.
Yeah, it's a very good question, and it's pretty tough, you know, because when we came there, we had also some donations, so we were here also to help. But the fact the non-governmental organization said that the states do not allow this organization to get some money from abroad. So in fact, we succeed to find a way. I would not like say to you the way it was doing because we don't want to make any problem to that. But there are non-governmental organizations who are working on the field and they're working very hard, very hard. But I think the best way to help the people is, I want just to say to the people who want to help, who send some money, don't give any money to some organization who's linked to Turkish states. The risk is that this money maybe will be used on the field, but not to all the population. We think that Kurdish people from Turkey will not receive that kind of help. We have the experience before. In 2011, there was an earthquake in Van, East Turkey, and you know, the goods were not arriving. People were saying that to us. So people have to be very aware of the fact that if they want to help, maybe they go and they should give to an organization that is called Rojasor, which is the Red Crescent, Crescent of Kurdistan. It's this organization is the one who will make the difference on the field. You can be sure that the money will be used in the proper way to help the population, all population. It's not a question of Kurdish, Turkish. It's only a question of mankind. So if the people are willing to give some money, they should give to Rojasor. This, I think, the best way to help the people on the field.
Thank you, Gael. We could go on, but we've come to the end now of our recording. It's been really helpful to hear these insights, and it's been so difficult to get kind of first-hand information about what's happening there for international audience. Is there any kind of closing thoughts, closing remarks that you want to share? Anything you think is important to say that we haven't touched on yet?
Okay, first I would like to talk about the work of that coordination with the trade unions and the leftist parties of they're doing an incredible job. The condition they were working in, many people were coming from few days, they were just like going back and forth to Adiaman and going back to their places due to the condition they were living in, like warehouse with full of dust. Sometimes they had some difficulty to breathe, but the people are very keen on working, going on the ground. They're doing a very, very incredible work. So I've got my thoughts are going to them. I want just to show that within the Turkish and Kurdish society, there are people who are involved, and they want to make the difference on the field, and they are also the ones who stands against the power in Turkey, and this is, I think, the alternative. So I would just like to thank them. They've been doing a very great job.
Yes, yeah, for sure. It's always amazing in these circumstances. We also see some of the best of humanity as well, and as you said.
Just one single word. Every time we see in fiction that when the worlds collide, that maybe the humanity would be just like beasts to one another. In that situation, all the people were taking care to everybody. It's like what I learned from this situation. This was my first time in that kind of circumstances. We can just trust the humanity when the thing is going wrong. Solidarity is the thing that prevails first.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's a great thought to end on, and let's hope that some good can come from this awful catastrophe. It was really striking to me as well. The things that you were saying just about you arrived in Diyarbakir, and it's only 700 people dead that of course normally would be the catastrophe of the decade. I don't know for anywhere else, but it just really brings out the scale of what's happened. And thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your your long-term support for not just the Kurdish people but for this whole region, which is so
Thank you for you, because it's not only going on the film, but our work as activists as well is to make know. And thank you for you to give us the opportunity to make know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gael. Thank you for joining us, and thank you also to all of our listeners. This has been the Kurdistan Connection with myself, Matt Broomfield. Until the next episode, goodbye.